We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
It's 2:43. Most of the concern about swine flu has focused on infecting each other, but at state fairs across the country this summer, animal health officials are taking steps to keep people from spreading the new H1N1 virus to pigs. As Sarah McCammon reports from NET Radio in Nebraska, those efforts could have consequences for both hogs and humans.
As you can probably tell, I'm in the swine section of a big open barn here at the Nebraska State Fair. Now, it's stationed at various points around the barn. There are signs that say, in big red letters, help keep our animals healthy. And they go on to ask people to please wash their hands, and if they're feeling ill, not to pet or touch the pigs. There's also a hand sanitizer dispenser just below that sign. The thing is, I've been here for quite some time, probably 45 minutes or so, and I have not seen anyone wash their hands.
We have some hand sanitizer in the car when we get in the car.
So on your way out, but not on your way in.
Well, we came clean,
Suzette Myers from Lincoln said she and her three kids hadn't noticed the signs on their way in, but they'd wash up later. Michael Cohen came from Omaha with his wife and their three kids. He said they saw the hand-washing stations, but hadn't visited them yet.
We are as soon as we leave here.
But you didn't do it on the way in.
We didn't do it on the way in.
Whether or not the message is getting through, the real goal is to keep pigs from getting the new H1N1 virus from people. So far, there's no evidence that's happened in the U.S., but transmission from humans to hogs has been reported in Canada, Australia, and Argentina. The fear is that the virus could pass between humans and animals and mutate into something more dangerous, says Bob Ehart of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture.
It may not occur, but why take the chance?
Fairs around the country have been asking visitors to exercise extra caution around pigs. Some have put up barriers to keep people away. Ehart says it's not just state fairs that are being careful.
Farms are paying more attention to, you know, delivery men coming to the farm, dropping off things and that kind of thing in order to be able to further assure that we're not unnecessarily creating contact that could cause for exposure in either direction.
If a herd in the U.S. turns up with the new virus, farmers fear the news would be another blow to the image of an industry that's been largely losing money for about 2 years. But Dr. John Clifford, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's chief veterinarian, says the risk to animals may increase in the coming months.
We would anticipate that if we see the emergence of this again this fall, which is being anticipated, that you're increasing the likelihood that we're going to find it in pigs.
Clifford expects a new H1N1 vaccine for use in hogs to be ready in late fall or early winter. Until then, farmers are hoping no swine come down with swine flu. For NPR News, I'm Sarah McCammon in Lincoln, Nebraska.
It's 2:46. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Across the country, county and state fairs are drawing to a close. Labor Day is just around the corner. Here in Illinois, as we near harvest, one last agricultural exposition wraps up tomorrow, the Farm Progress Show. Two guests join me this afternoon to talk about America's agricultural fairs, in particular the county fair. My guests are Drake Hokanson and Carol Krotz. They are co-authors of Purebred and Homegrown, America's County Fairs. The book, published by the University of Wisconsin Press, offers readers a fascinating and entertaining overview of the county fair and its significance in American culture. Drake Hokanson, Carol Krotz, welcome.
Good afternoon, Celeste.
Hi, hello. How are you?
just fine today, and it's fun to hear about fairs. I wish I were there.
Me too. It's a beautiful day here in Illinois. It would just be fabulous to be out at one. You know, there aren't very many of us who make a living on the farm anymore. The fair is largely meant to showcase agriculture. Why does the county fair endure?
Well, I think it endures because it's deeply embedded in kind of our sense of who we are as Americans. We argue in our book that it goes back to the whole notion of from Thomas Jefferson, of the yeoman farmer who, in Jefferson's time, he and she who make up the large part of the body politic, who become educated and become independent and contribute to the well being of the nation.
Go ahead, Carol.
I was going to say, also, it's a tremendously traditional event in America. And in 2011, agricultural fair, the modern agricultural fair in America, will have its 200th anniversary. And so it's a very traditional thing. And so that's one of the reasons it also is perpetuated, I think.
Yeah. Have county fairs changed much over the last couple of 100 years?
They have changed a great deal in many of the events and many of the things. Of course, a lot of farm equipment and farm techniques have changed dramatically. But we suggest in the book that the founders of the American Agricultural Fair, the modern fair, could go to a fair today and recognize almost everything that goes on. As Carol points out, there's a real sense of tradition across many, many years. We still bring pies. We don't have plowing contests with oxen anymore, but we might have plowing contests with modern farm equipment.
Or a tractor pull.
Exactly, a tractor pull. Uh-huh. Contests are a big part of the fair, always have been.
Is the future for these fairs bright?
I think the future is very bright. I actually think the fair has been changing a little bit and evolving a little bit since the day it was created, although we hang on to these very traditional things, as you just discussed. But they keep making changes and tweaks in order to keep attracting people. And so that leads to new kinds of competitions and exhibitions. And, certainly the entertainment has changed so that we have big-name entertainment now at fairs. So fairs are always up against this real pull, and as one of the fair managers said to us, everybody wants progress, but nobody wants change. So.
Is there any difference? Is there any kind of, if you were dropped down into a county fair in Massachusetts and then later in the day dropped down to a county fair in Kansas, are there differences region to region in terms of what you'll find at the fair?
There are great differences, and that's one of the really delightful things about working on a book like this, is that you really get to experience some of the regional variety in a very interesting country. Certainly there are, for instance, in Massachusetts, to use that example, you will find oxen pulls at a number of fairs. It's a popular event, an old-fashioned agricultural event, but you won't find those in many fairs outside of New England. In west of the Mississippi particularly, you'll find rodeo as an important event. You will find the same kinds of things, you will find similar things at fairs across the country. But in the south, at fairs, you'll find vegetable crops that you don't find in the north. You'll find a lot of kind of regional and sometimes ethnic effects of fairs. And we say that one of the great things you can do if you're traveling during the summer is to figure out when and where the fairs are, wherever you're going to be traveling, and visit them. Talk to people. Find out about what life is like in that particular county.
Mm-hmm. How many county fairs are held every summer across the states?
Well, we postulate, it sort of depends, but it's around 22 or 2,300 fairs. It's a lot of fairs, and it'd be hard to go to all of them, but it might be kind of fun.
Yeah. There's one of the many wonderful photographs in the book is of a county fair in Adams, Massachusetts, and here we have these beautiful oxen.
They were truly magical.
Oh, my gosh, they are beautiful.
Yes, and if there's a horse whisperer and there's a dog whisperer, then surely Hervey must be the oxen whisperer, because he just really was able to make them move and pull in ways that nobody else could.
Yeah, and they are adorned
yes.
with a beautiful headgear. Yeah.
Yeah, that's again part of the tradition. He was using Canadian head yokes that he had learned about years ago, I think perhaps from his father, who also had oxen. And this was a way of maintaining a sense of tradition in these beautiful animals.
Mm-hmm. Now, is he passing this skill, this art craft, down to the next generation?
He isn't, I think, working necessarily with his family, but I know he's training other oxen workers, and he himself has raised many oxen and then sold them to other people, and I know that he does some training with them. So we all hope, don't we, that these things get passed on to the generation so we can continue the tradition.
Mm-hmm. And this is I may point out, a really important element of the American Agricultural Fair. It was originally launched as a way of providing an informal education for farmers. And farmers go to college now, farmers and ranchers. They don't need the fair in the same way. But they do learn a great deal about those pursuits that are related to farming, like raising horses or ideas about cattle or sheep or what have you. There is an educational component, which is also combined beautifully with a social component of people getting together around a specialized interest and sharing ideas. It's really a very wonderful part of the fair.
Yeah, also sharing food. Is there a quintessential fair food?
Well, everyone thinks, I think, of the kinds of foods that we only get when we go to the fair, and those are the foods that we wait for, and we march right over and get our elephant ear or our corn dog, and those are very fun parts of the fair. But there's also really nice regional expression sometimes in the food that is at a fair. I mean, we were at salmon bakes on the West Coast and chicken barbecues in the Virginia, and so we got to experience some regional food because of being there. But Drake and I also felt, after probably 5 different years on the road to do research, that we really couldn't survive on fair food alone. So we always had our cooler with a few salads in there just for rounding out the meal.
Yeah.
The people who work in providing food at fairs, how do they get into the business?
Well, it's often a family business, like so many things, or somebody who has an idea wants to sell elephant ears or onion rings or something at the fair. Some of them are restaurateurs who go on the road, and frankly, a lot of them make a heck of a lot more money than they would or did as restaurateurs in a shorter period of time. It's that usual kind of business model from the bootstraps up.
Mm-hmm. There is a family in a fair that's very near to where we live in La Crosse, Wisconsin. The fair is in Viroqua in Vernon County, and there's a family there who has started a business maybe 30 years ago. It's called Hubs Fries, and they make homemade French fries. They start with the whole potatoes that you can see just sitting on the counter, and they put them in a press that they actuate with a hand, you know, so just pull it through and there come out the fries, and then deep fry them, place them in a paper cone, kind of like a snow cone, and sprinkle them with salt. They have put, I think, something like 9 family members through college with the profits that they've made selling only French fries. And they only go to about 2 fairs in our state. So, but they are a delicacy, and when you go to the Vernon County Fair, you don't leave without having them.
Yeah.
Something very special about them.
Yeah. Now, do they really like the fair life? Do they like going to those 2 fairs every year?
I think they're happy to do it, but everybody in the family is working in the booth, and I think they wouldn't want to make a living out of it, though, but it certainly is a good endeavor for those 2 fairs.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon about the county fair. It's really been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure for us as well, Celeste.
Yeah.
Drake Hokanson and Carol Kratz are the co-authors of Purebred and Homegrown, America's County Fairs. The book, published by the University of Wisconsin Press, offers readers a fascinating and entertaining overview of the county fair and its significance in American culture.
Earth and Sky.
Wednesday, September 2, 2009. As seen from all over the world, the waxing gibbous moon and bright planet Jupiter pair up together on this glorious September night.
You'll see them in the east or southeast sky at nightfall. Jupiter is the brightest heavenly body in the evening sky after the moon, so you can't miss it or mistake it for anything else. The moon and Jupiter will swing westward throughout the night for the same reason that the sun moves westward during the day, because Earth is spinning from west to east on its axis.
Look for the moon and Jupiter to climb highest up in our sky by late night tonight. Afterwards, they'll start descending in the sky again, and they'll set in the west in the wee hours before sunrise. Although the moon and Jupiter shine close together on our sky's dome tonight, they're actually far apart in space. The moon, our closest celestial neighbor, is only about 1.3 light seconds from Earth. Jupiter, the fifth planet outward from the sun, lies 34 light minutes distant tonight.
The moon looks bigger than Jupiter only because it's so much closer to us. In reality,